Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon, along with our producer, Lee Cantor. My co-host is Bill McHenry, but he's under the weather today. Lee, how are you doing?
He's always sick, that Bill.
It's
been weeks now.
That's true. Lee, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're going to be featuring Eric Wolf of Zero G Creative. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsor?
Sure. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, you know, Eric Wolf self-describes himself as a recovering corporate marketing director. He's also the founder of Zero G Creative, which is a marketing firm serving small businesses and startup clients exclusively. Eric's also the co-author of a book called Marketing Unmasked, and he's a frequent speaker at small business marketing topics. And he's also co-host of the Gravity Free Radio, which is a weekly radio program right here on this station, featuring advice for entrepreneurs. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you so much, Ron.
And I understand that our topic today is going to be in the world of blogging. And I know, the people that I work with, they'll say, what's a blog and what do you do with it and, all that. But why in the world should a business be thinking about blogging?
There are a lot of reasons to think about blogging. And in the B2B world especially, it's one of those things where a business owner might say to themselves, well, why do I need to blog? I'm in a niche player in a niche industry, and my customers know me. Why do I need a blog? When you're in that kind of business, and really when you're selling to any kind of a B2B marketplace, there are two things that generally drive a whole lot of your business. It's relationships, and it's expertise, and blogging helps you accomplish both. What a blog is, essentially, is sort of an ongoing conversation that happens on your website, and it gives you a forum to talk about all of the things that you or your colleagues are experts in. And it allows you to develop a perspective, which is really, really important for somebody who is going to hire you to understand. Well, what's your perspective on topic A, B, and C? What are the things that you can teach me as your client? What are the things that I should expect from you? Blogging, it provides a really great way for you to answer all of those questions. It gives you an opportunity to become a thought leader in your industry. Also gives you the opportunity to improve SEO. It gives you the opportunity to develop tools for yourself that you can use while you're networking and while you're building relationships. So there are a whole lot of reasons to blog and to blog fairly frequently.
Now, most people I run into when I mention blogging to them, they're like, I'm going to run out of things to say in about, three blog posts. How do you kind of coach them in kind of coming up with the different topics that they need to, because a blog is a commitment. Like, it's not something you do one time and you're done. It's something you have to do regularly over time.
That's what myself and a lot of people call blogger's block. Mm-hmm. When you say, okay, well, I've got these three ideas and then I'm out. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ways that you can avoid blogger's block. One of the ways is to definitely keep a list of all the things that you could potentially talk about. Of course, if the list isn't refreshed, you do run out mm-hmm. over time. The other thing is, and one thing that I think is sort of misunderstood about blogging is that on a blog, the content itself doesn't always have to be unique. The perspective has to be unique. And so if you're just hurting for a blog topic and you have absolutely no idea what you're going to write about for the next couple of weeks, go and see what's happening in your industry. Go and see what's happening in the news. Go and see what other people are talking about and grab that information, credit it, of course. But add your own perspective, because it's the perspective that keeps people coming back to your blog, and it's your perspective that people are actually looking for. You're not the news media when you're writing a blog. You're more like the editorial section. And so when you take that perspective and you use your blog that way, you can always come up with something to talk about. The other thing that I recommend that folks do to keep their blog topics fresh is think about what those frequently asked questions are that you always get when you're sitting down with your clients. When you get the same types of things over and over again, and I get them all the time, and you're asking some of them right now. blogging is shrouded in mystery. But when people ask you those questions, use your blog to respond to them. And then the next time somebody asks the question or asks something that's relevant to that topic, you've got a built-in follow-up to continue the conversation with that person, because you can say, well, Haley, that was a fantastic question. Let me send you this link from my blog, or include the link in a follow-up email or something like that. The other thing that I encourage people to do when they're really, really hurting is to go back through their old blog posts and pick out the ones that were really, really great. And maybe it was 6 months ago, maybe it was 9 months ago, but offer your today perspective on your 6 months ago topic. There are a lot of things that you can do like that.
Yeah, I can tell from your answers that this is not the first time you've had questions about blogs, but I've just learned probably, I don't know, a lot about blogs here in just a couple of sentences that you had.
Well, blogging is really misunderstood because it started out not as a business medium, of course, but a social medium. Mm-hmm. This was something that really the first bloggers, I believe, to get truly popular were sort of the mommy and daddy bloggers who were talking about their kids and who were talking about all the cute things that were happening in their house and the lessons and the learnings and all that stuff. And it's really only in the last few years become really viable as a business tool. And that's certainly partially in part to folks like Seth Godin who have really based their entire business lives around having a blog, but it's still a little bit new for business, and certainly in a lot of industries we've got a lot of late adopters, and so it's one of those scary things that folks look at and they say, okay, everyone tells me I need a blog. Why in the world is that true?
Right. And so, you know, what I picked up from what you were saying is that, you know, it's a forum, you know, to share with your clients your expertise, and that it's kind of an online conversation where you develop a relationship with the people that are following your blog. And really that can translate into more business.
Absolutely. And one of the things that when people say, well, how do I whenever I get that question of how does my blog actually make me money?
Right.
Because obviously, as business people, you know, every now and then vanity plays a part. But generally speaking, we try not to engage in time-consuming activities that don't have a that aren't going to have a positive ROI at the end. And so the one thing I sort of eliminate as a money-making opportunity from the blog right off the bat is don't expect that it's going to make you famous or that you're going to get a book deal or anything like that. That should not be an expectation. But beyond that, there are four ways that are sort of my favorite money-making opportunities from your blog. The first one is to use it in your sales process. That is an absolute given. You're putting out information that is just so relevant to the people who are going to be ultimately your clients. When you are talking to people and when you're trying to develop that relationship and develop that expertise, you say, you leverage it. You've got content, you leverage it. You put it in your, I send people thank you notes all the time when I take a meeting. And like I mentioned earlier, I respond to their questions by way of, hey, check out my blog. Here's a link that really might interest you. And I've just done something helpful for them that maybe another vendor could not. So that's the first way that I definitely like to use blogging. The second way is socializing it. You just because somebody isn't necessarily a prospect or engaged in a sales cycle does not mean that they're not going to be interested in something that you have to say. Every now and then when you write something great, I definitely encourage people to share it with the people in their network, either their business or social network, who they consider influential. If you know people who are well-connected, put your content in their hands. Leverage it in your email newsletter. Why are you going to, if you're a regular blogger, why are you going to spend a whole lot of extra time composing this separate marketing initiative? You know, go ahead and build that right into your email newsletter. Another way to use your blog to drive revenue is by aggregating the content. That's one of my favorite ways to that's one of my favorite ways actually to leverage blog content, because everybody always talks about these hard things to do in their business. Building, I've got to write this white paper, or somebody told me it would be really great to write an ebook or something like that. And when you're writing every single week, it's amazing how easy it is to write a longer piece like that over time. And if you say to yourself, okay, well, I want to write a white paper about topic A, B, or C, why do I need to sit down for a week and agonize over this white paper that I'm probably going to procrastinate for 3 months? If I'm blogging every week, I can make, I can make one or two posts a month about my white paper topic. And over 2 or 3 months, the thing writes itself. I wrote a book called Marketing Unmasked, which you mentioned, and I can honestly say that about 60% of that content originated on my blog. Hmm. When you blog for a number of years, it's really amazing how quickly you can accumulate content.
Okay, so that was, I think you said there was 4 ways to.
I missed one.
You're going to hold them to that?
Yep. I skipped. Would you settle for 3.5?
No.
I'm sorry. I skipped one. The fourth thing that I encourage people to do with their blog is to actually use it to make new connections. Generally speaking, in today's marketplace, the true thought leaders in any given industry are online. They're usually bloggers themselves. And so when you can use that to make a connection with somebody and you start commenting on their blog, you engage them in conversation, you say, hey, I wrote about this same topic on mine. Here's what I think, and here's a link. And here's what I think, A, B, C, D. I really loved your points. And you can actually develop relationships with folks that way, and maybe ultimately you could even get somebody who has expertise in your industry to come and be a guest blogger on your site. Get them, ask somebody for 300 words on a topic, and I think you'll be surprised that they might actually give it to you. So blogging can actually be used as a proactive networking tool as well to make new profitable connections.
That's pretty cool. So,
and that was four.
That was four.
Did
yeah, the
Price Waterhouse come and validate
right.
that?
You didn't know you'd be audited, did you?
That's
no,
right.
No, I didn't.
Well, what I got was use it in the sales process, socialize it, aggregate the content, and use it to make new connections. So that's four really good ways to kind of monetize it. I know that one of the top blogs on intellectual property law is IP Watchdog. And he's kind of transitioned from being the only person that's doing blogs, and now he has people, like you just said, that come in and write guest articles. And I wrote one, for him on in the talking about the difference between it can be patented but not sold, it can be sold but not patented, and it can be patented and sold. And I used the example of a really strange mousetrap as something that it could be patented, but there's no mice in the world intelligent enough to get caught by this trap. Okay, and everybody seemed to really, really like that particular article. But yeah, he's done what you talked about. He's making a lot of new connections by having people write articles for his blog, basically.
And it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, because when you make those connections and then you write something great, the next time you want to go and socialize that and try to get into as many hands as possible, you've got an additional bank of really influential people that could potentially be sharing your content.
Right.
It's it's really amazing how you can sort of put the pieces together and say, oh, well, wait a minute. I can actually use this as a tool to influence my marketplace. Mm. And it's really great when you can make that happen.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the overall marketing strategy, where does blogging fit in?
Where blogging fits in is it's really where the content comes from, or a lot of the content comes from. When you look at all the pieces that drive a typical and especially a B2B marketing strategy, B2C is a little bit different, but blogging certainly has a place there. We've been talking primarily about B2B, so we'll kind of keep down that road. In a B2B marketing strategy, you've got a whole lot of things that you're focused on. You're focused on your website. You're focused on your SEO. You're focused on your networking. You're focused on your email newsletter. You're focused on social media, perhaps. And so where blogging comes in is that blogging actually provides the content engine that you can use to drive all of those individual pieces. It doesn't solve all your problems, and it's not the only thing you should be doing. But in terms of all of these things that you know that you should be doing that are content-driven, blogging is going to take care of a really, really significant chunk of that. Because as we talked about, you can use blogging to drive most of the content in your email newsletter. You can use blogging to drive your website updates. Website updates are very, very important. And when you've got a blog that's integrated with your website, and perhaps you've got featured blog posts on your homepage and leveraged throughout your website, you're updating your blog can act as can update your site. Blogging is tremendous for search engine optimization. Just about any SEO expert you talk to will tell you that. And the reason is that that one of the things that Google and the other search engines look for when they're crawling your site is they're looking for frequently updated content. They're looking for quality content, and they're looking to see how much you have and how it fits together. And blogging creates a constant stream of new content for Google and the other search engines to read. And it's also relevant to your industry. It's relevant to your core business. And so that can contribute really positively to your search rankings. It's not the only thing, but it helps. And certainly from a social media perspective, when you're having conversations online with folks, blogging fits right into that and can actually take care of a whole lot of those updates.
Now, it sounds like blogging's a wonderful tool, but it also sounds like it's a lot of work. Is it something like you have to do every day? Is it once a month? Like how often do you have to do this in order for it to, you know, to get those benefits you described?
I think that you have to do it at least once a week, and I'll tell you why. And that itself sounds like a lot of work, I know, but if you do it less than once a week, if you're blogging say once every month, then it's not really a blog. It's more like an email newsletter. If you're blogging once a quarter, like some people do, if you go to the website and you press blog and you see the last time you updated was November or something like that, then it's not a blog. Blogging works best as a series of short and frequent updates.
And define short.
200 to 400 words.
Okay, so that's the weekly commitment in your mind? That's the minimum you should be doing?
The minimum, 2 to 3 paragraphs. Now, I don't think also that you need to do a whole lot more than that. I think that there's going to be a, as with anything, there's sort of a point of diminishing returns where you're investing more time than you're going to get return. But generally, for a lot of businesses that I work with, I find that 2 to 3 times a week is a really great sweet spot. 4 or 5 times a week that's a lot of work. 2 times a week, I think, is great, but at least once a week. If you are going to be serious about using this to drive all the types of initiatives that we talked about, then blog at least once a week.
Okay. And I know whenever you're running a business, you're always looking to things that only the business owner can do versus the things that can be outsourced out or given to employees or whatever. Can I hire somebody to do my blogging for me?
You sort of it's one of those things where you sort of can and you sort of can't. In my opinion, a lot of the sort of air quotes managed blogging services or ghostwriter services, I think that they're fundamentally flawed, in that there's a point where if you're blogging Ron Reardon and you hire a ghostwriter, at what point does it stop being your blog? At what point is the ghostwriter or the company so far off on their own that they're having conversations that aren't even relevant to your business? I think that there's a real need that the content, that the message really come from the person who's got the expertise. There's also the technical part of it in terms of who's going to actually push the button and put the blog on the website and who's going to take that and update the Twitter account and who's going to make that the LinkedIn status and things like that. That to me is actually a separate discussion. I don't care who does the mechanical part of it. There's a lot of pushback from business owners in terms of, okay, well, you told me I need to blog and you told me I need to be on social media. Who's going to teach me how to do all this stuff? I don't care who actually does any of that stuff. What I want to see come out, though, at sort of the other end of this machine is your expertise on the internet every single week. And so how that machine processes, it doesn't matter if there's an intern involved, if there's an admin involved, if there's your 16-year-old daughter involved. It doesn't matter how any of that stuff happens. But I think that that it's really, really important that if you're going to be successful, that the person with the expertise is the person that's in charge of actually creating that message.
So it's the content should be written or should be come out of the brain of the blogger. No, you can't subcontract that out.
No, I don't think you can. And I think that when you do, that there are just a whole lot of hazards there that It creates a lot of problems. It creates inauthenticity. It creates risks in, it's just like any situation where you have somebody speaking on your behalf and not just speaking as your agent, but actually saying that they're you.
Right. It's not authentic anymore.
It stops doing what it's supposed to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, and when you look at the heart of the purpose for blogging, where it's your perspective and your expertise and the relationship you are building with, other businesses or other clients, you're right. It's got to be you.
Your perspective cannot be duplicated, and your experience cannot be duplicated. We're all different for a reason, and we choose who we want to work with in different services that are relevant to our business for a reason. It's because we're drawn to certain individuals and we're drawn to the way that they present themselves. And so if you want this to work with all these other things that you're doing, you've got to take the same approach to to building an online relationship as you do to building offline relationships. You know, I couldn't send you to my meetings and convince everybody in the room that you were me.
Right.
It's the same thing online.
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with Jackie Hutter, who's an IP strategist.
Yes.
But she has a blog, and her perspective is so fresh and that nobody could be Jackie Hutter than her. Okay, nobody could write her blog. She's the only one. And when people read her blog, they're just naturally drawn to her expertise, you know, and want to engage her, you know, because she knows her stuff.
And in that industry, I mean, I would say that, and certainly in Atlanta, I don't know enough about the business to know how she fits into the overall scope. But as far as the people I know in Atlanta that do similar things as she does, she takes a very, very different approach. And if and it's certainly not for everybody, but if that's what's attracting you to her, and you know, you need her. She's the only one that can give you that information.
Right. I mean, she shoots straight from the hip. I always tell people that when Jackie and I are in the same room, you know, I've always considered myself to be a really smart person, but I feel like a moron when I'm with her because she is so brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. So what other misconceptions are there about blogging other than what you've already talked about?
Wow. I think that the biggest one of the biggest misconceptions about blogging, and I know that we've gone through a lot of stuff, but I think that one of the things that that people sort of misunderstand is that it's the same with all social media, where people say, well, why are people going to be interested in what I have to say? And
it's
in
kind
my
of
opinion,
an inferiority complex, you think, well, that people have? That
well, sort of. We live in this crazy information age where we have more access to information on a mobile device today than our parents had an entire library, and it fits right in our pocket. It's you know, we're creating this incredible amount of information, and what am I going to throw into the mix that isn't already there? You know, I think maybe it is an inferiority complex, but there's sort of a practical aspect to that as well, I think. But in my mind, if nobody was interested in what you have to say, then you probably wouldn't have friends or clients or a spouse. And the things you have to say are innately interesting because they're yours. And they may not be interesting to everybody, but they're going to be interesting to a select audience, certainly.
Well, I know that there's a tendency that when we develop a certain level of expertise, and then it's something that we practice day in and day out, that we tend to devalue that information because it's just what we do every day.
Right. It's so familiar to us.
Yeah. I know, you know, at one time, you know, it took me 6 months to learn how to roll a kayak. And then I received some instruction by people that, you know, were experts at this. And they actually taught us how to teach people how to roll a kayak in 1 hour. Okay, something that took me 6 months.
Right.
And you know, when I talk to people about, well, you know, it's actually very easy to roll a kayak, you know, as long as, you know, you are snug in the boat so that when you move your hips, the boat moves, okay? And if you learn how to do the last thing first, you know, there's a couple of techniques.
Right.
That if you follow those techniques, you can learn to roll a kayak in an hour.
Right.
In a swimming pool with goggles and nose plugs and all like that. But, you know, now that I know that information, I just consider it to be, you know, of very low
right.
valuable.
Common knowledge.
Common knowledge. But if somebody doesn't know that, then, right. you know, it's really valuable. Okay. 6 months, 1 hour, that's a lot of difference. You
right.
know? So I think that's probably part of it, Eric, is that we tend to devalue stuff that is valuable to other people. But for us, it's just like breathing.
Well, for there's a great book called Made to Stick, which is man, if I could only remember
Heath, last name.
Yeah,
is Heath.
Yeah, the Heath brothers, Chip and Dan. I think it's Chip and Dan. So they wrote this book called Made to Stick, and it's why and the whole basis of the book is about essentially how we understand information, and one of the things that they talk about, which was just so eye opening, but you don't realize it until your consciousness is you know, awoken to it, is that as soon as you know a piece of information, it is absolutely impossible to understand again what it's like not to have that piece of information. You can't put yourself in that person's shoes. You completely lose your objectivity. And so there's a whole lot that we all know that is worth sharing, that we take for granted, these things that are just so darn easy. And, you know, you could probably not just fill a blog, but fill a few books with that kind of information.
Right. All right. Well, this has really been super. How can our listeners get in touch with you, Eric?
You can find me on Twitter at Eric Wolf, E-R-I-K-W-O-L-F, and you can find me on the web at Zero G Creative, Z-E-R-O, the letter G, creative.com.
Okay, that's super. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Eric. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights, especially on blogging.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, another great show, Lee.
Yeah, and a special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
And you can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen again to today's show, plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon, Lee Cantor, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.